This is the Made of Clay Report with Peaches Gillette and Eric Clay. Our guest on this episode is Fidel Moreno of Red Nations Rising. Today's topic is the recognition and support of Indigenous peoples and Fidel's life experience in a world marred by racism and classism. We're also highlighting two events that Fidel is connected with. One is the International Day of Peace on September 21st from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. at 334 Hunt Hill Road in Ithaca. And the other is the October 13 Indigenous Peoples Day celebration at 2 p.m. at South Hill Cidery and at 7 p.m. at First Presbyterian Church in Trumansburg. And on October 11, Peaches will address land acknowledgement statements and how to truly recognize Indigenous peoples at the Interfaith and Secular Ethics Conference at Namgyal Monastery. More information on all of these events can be found at madeofclay.org, and this conversation may be listened to in its entirety at madeofclay.org. This is the Made of Clay Report with Peaches Gillette and Eric Clay. Our guest on this episode is Fidel Moreno. Good to have you with us.
Thank you so much. Thank you, WRI, Ben Oakley, and Carlos Gutierrez, who I had the honor and privilege of having lunch with the other day. And thank you, Eric, for facilitating this. And she should have a doctorate, Reverend yes. Polly Peaches. Thank you so much. We had a wonderful visit a couple weeks ago, and we talked about doing a radio interview. So here we are in beautiful Finger Lakes region, Ithaca, New York. Yes. Thank you.
You're welcome. And thank you for being here. You know, you and I have known each other on and off for the last year more than anything. And right. Every conversation that we've had has been enlightening and vibrant and really special. And so you were one of the people who I felt need to have a larger audience for your voice in this particular way. And we're happy to have you here. Yeah. I'm impressed with your world of experience, your connection with your people, Native American people, and I believe you have a Mexican background. Is that also what you told me?
Absolutely.
And so I think I wanted to open with that because you're, you know, for me, you know, anytime we meet people who are plugged into other communities and certainly who have had other experiences, it just makes our lives richer and broader. And I wanted you to start off talking a little bit about your history and your history actually here in Ithaca. And so we'll just open the floor for you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I want to give all honor and glory to my dad, my father, who passed on about a year and a half ago at 90, Fidel Martinez Moreno, or Fidel Moreno Martinez, and my mother, Connie, who's still alive, and I'll share this link with her. She's 85 and still manages her 50-year family business, Houston Preferred Properties. And the reason why I do so is because both of my parents always reminded me that, you know, I'm here because of the prayers of my great-grandparents, my grandparents, maternal and paternal. And I just really feel, you know, honored to be, you know, at this time in this place right here. Last night, for example, I was at Cornell University with about 30 to 40 students from different backgrounds who were bringing awareness and attention and honoring the memory of many, many babies before their first year birthday, mothers and journalists who have been, you know, murdered in Gaza. And it's you know, there was so much information shared and so many tears that flowed that, you know, I also joined them in their tears.
Yes.
How can one not be moved when one hears about, you know, the thousands of children and women and families and elders, you know, who are being murdered, you know, each and every day. And you know, I know there's conflicts going on around the world. And here in Ithaca, the sun is shining and, you know, people are walking down the street smiling. Not that they shouldn't be. It's just the irony of the reality of what we have, you know, in this day at this time. And I'm here to witness that, you know. And I
Mm-hmm.
guess with that, I'll say that, you know, my earliest memories, I remember my mother, I don't know, I must have been, I was born in 1960, but I remember, you know, I mean, I remember joy and laughter. I was raised in my great grandmother and mother's village and maternal grandmother's village called Otlán, Jalisco, which is a mountainous village in the semi-tropical area of Jalisco.
Very
The
good.
song that everybody remembers is Guadalajara, Guadalajara. You know, I think Elvis Presley sang that. But anyway, I spent time in that village from 7 to 11 and earlier on. And you know, everybody I knew and everybody that knew me, you know, we all like helped each other, knew each other. You know, the food that I ate was either raised, you know, or bred by my family or neighbors or community. So it was like paradise. My grandfather had orchards, avocado, pomegranate, papaya, and mango. And so it was like a paradise for me. And then jumping from that to the south side of Chicago, Blue Island in California, you know, the El Rucans on my right, the Black Gangster Disciples on my left, the Latin Kings behind me and the Irish gang in front of me, and everybody looked Irish to me at, you know, 11 years old. So it was quite an interesting juxtaposition to be raised in. And you know, it seems like that was a good start for my life experience and path in understanding the dynamics of relationships. You
Yes.
know, right relationship in my community, in my family, with my parents, with my siblings, you know, with the neighborhood. You know, I had an eighth grade Catholic education. I was an altar boy. And at the same time, you know, I was getting in knife fights with kids, you know, in fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth grade, because that was the nature of the reality. You know what I'm saying? And my parents moved me out of Chicago quite young into the suburbs, western suburbs of Aurora, Illinois. And you know, my story is a very humble one in terms of my parents were hardworking people. You know, they worked very, very hard. They were, you know, from Mexico on my mother's side, my maternal line. I'm indigenous. I'm Wiradika, Huichol. A Mexican, Sephardic Jew. There's North African blood in me. I think I shared with you, Reverend Peaches, a picture of my grandfather, my maternal grandfather, Juan Antonio Diaz Perez, Sanchez Dominguez. You know, white, green-eyed, tall, you know, Criollo, Mexican-born Spaniard, and then his wife, my grandmother, you know, was brown and round and short and indigenous, and the Mexican Revolution brought them together, you know, and that's a whole nother story. But so it's interesting. My origins come from the Mexican Revolution, which was an indigenous agrarian revolution, you know, hijacked by the intellectuals. That's why Trotsky was killed in Mexico. And you know, there's a lot to that part of my family. And then on my dad's side, I'm also my grandfather is a Criollo, Mexican-born Spaniard, green-eyed, tall, and dark-haired, and yet his wife was a Zacoteco Indian from Zacatecas, the silver capital of Mexico. So, you know, I know my history, I know where I come from, and I can remember my parents at a very young age, you know, telling me, "Oh, you're going to have to give up your bed for your uncle that's coming through town, or your tia, my aunt." And I'd never seen these people before, and of course, they were migrant workers coming through, farm workers. You know what I'm saying? That were staying the night because my parents were taking them to a doctor's visit or taking them to take care of their green card. My parents were very involved with the migrant workers' rights, and you know, they were very aware of you know, what was going on in terms of the exploitation and the hard lifestyle and occupational hazards of migrant workers, you know. So I was kind of raised around that.
Let's break for music. Our musical breaks throughout this show are Native American church peyote healing chants provided by Fidel's nephews, Eliah Claw, and Joshua Claw. This is the Made of Clay Report with Peaches Gillette and Eric Clay. Our guest on this episode is Fidel Moreno of Red Nations Rising. Today's topic is the recognition and support of Indigenous peoples and Fidel's life experience in a world marred by racism and classism. We're also highlighting two events that Fidel is connected with. One is the International Day of Peace on September 21st from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. at 334 Hunt Hill Road in Ithaca. And the other is the October 13 Indigenous Peoples Day celebration at 2 p.m. at South Hill Cidery and at 7 p.m. at First Presbyterian Church in Trumansburg. And on October 11, Peaches will address land acknowledgement statements and how to truly recognize Indigenous peoples at the Interfaith and Secular Ethics Conference at Namgyal Monastery. More information on all of these events can be found at madeofclay.org, and this conversation may be listened to in its entirety at madeofclay.org.
You know, I was the first born generation here. First generation went to college. My first direct action was organizing a Dick Gregory protest on the campus of a Christian university, a small Christian college called Aurora College. Mm. We're all familiar with Kentucky Fried Chicken, Colonel
Yes.
Sanders.
Yes.
Well, this is one of the schools that he funded, and I went to school there. And it was an interesting school, and interesting enough, and this has been my mantra for the past 20 years, is this is how Creator works. This is how God works, is that my sophomore year there, which is the first year that I attended Aurora College, which is now Aurora University, there was a very interesting professor named Dr. Greg Barrick. And he's now a professor emeritus at the University of Michigan, prolific writer. He came out of the Berkeley Radical School of Sociology, criminologist. And he had just written a book called In Defense of Whom? A Critique of the Public Defender System. This was in
Great.
the 60s, 70s. The Miranda rights came out, and and so you have this what appears on the face to be a just or a justice system that acknowledges the rights of indigent people, people of color. And in reality, it was a revolving door with plea bargaining just to get people through the system faster and into the prison pipeline,
Yes, yes.
And he offered me, I had an uncle who was a border activist who was murdered named Gregorio Moreno. He's in books on border activism.
Okay.
And he was a socialist, and he would talk to me about the principles of Marxism. And he lived in Juarez, and which is a border town right across from El Paso, and that's where I spent my summers with my uncle. And he opened my eyes to look at, the environment around me
Yes.
and people around me, not in terms of color,
Yep.
but in terms of class. You
Yes.
know, why do certain people have certain values? Why do certain people have certain behaviors? This is what he taught me to start looking at. And he gave me a couple books to read. They were of Marxist perspective. And then, so when I went to college and I met Dr. Greg Barrick, who wrote this book, he was a Marxist sociologist who had a very specific perspective on privilege, class, power, and racism. So,
Okay.
being a person of, when I remember when I went to my first class at Aurora College, a professor said to me, "Oh, you're Chicano." And I'm like, "Chicano? What the hell's a Chicano?" I didn't know
Yeah.
what a Chicano was. And which, the Chicano movement started in the 60s, like the American Indian movement, like the counterculture, and mostly from the Southwest, Texas, and California, which is where Chicanismo was born from. And it's basically of people of Mexican descent acknowledging and identifying their indigenous roots, right? That's what a Chicano is. Well, when this professor said, "Oh, you're Chicano," I'm like, "Excuse me? What's a Chicano?" He says, "Well, aren't you of Mexican descent?" "Yes, I am." "And well, you're born in the United States?" I said, "Yes, Chicago, Illinois, South Side." He goes, "You're a Chicano." I said, "No, I'm a Mexican American." I hadn't been politicized yet, but I knew that I was indigenous because I was a little, because I used to experience our Matachina dances. Like New Mexico, the Pueblos, they dance on Catholic Saints days. The same thing in Mexico. The Spanish did quite a number on us, in terms of getting us to swallow and digest at the point of a sword and threat of death, Catholicism.
Yes.
They built their Catholic churches on top of the indigenous sacred sites of Mexico and El Salvador and Nicaragua, Belize, Guatemala, Peru. So it's like an interesting. I don't know if you, Pete, Reverend Peaches or
Yes.
Eric, have you seen the movie The Mission?
Oh, yes. Oh, you have. I
Okay.
haven't seen it. Yeah.
It's about a 40-year-old
Well,
movie that's incredibly powerful.
wow, that's great.
very powerful. Well, that movie basically tells, gives you a taste of what the Spanish and Portuguese, did to the indigenous people, and how a conquest is very different from what our native indigenous relatives in the Northwest, Canada, and in the Northeast experienced by a colonial experience. The Queen, I have to say, the Queen, at least at the very minimum, acknowledged the ancestral hereditary land rights and entered into treaties with some of the native people of Canada. That's why you have British Columbia. There's treaties that the Queen enacted with the indigenous people. And over here too, the king and queens of France and England, entered into treaties with the indigenous people, albeit they still, used horrible, ways of intimidating, threatening, and enforcing, their political will on the indigenous people here in the United States and in Canada. But there is a difference between a colonial oppression in a Spanish, Portuguese, French conquest, if you will. Do you know
There
what I'm saying?
you go.
So that's why in Mexico, they acknowledge that yes, Mexicans are of indigenous descent and lineage, but they say everybody in Mexico is Indian, and all the Indians have Spanish in them, so they're not about to give any kind of precedent or protection or sovereign status to indigenous people of Mexico. Yet it's interesting that most of the tribes in the Southwest and Southern Plains, like the Hopi and the Pueblos and the Apache, not the Apache, but some of the Southern Plains tribes like the Kiowa and the Caddo, they have origins in the South. They came up from Mexico. Some came from the Bering Strait, like the Navajo, the Diné. In fact, the Aztecs came from the north. They came from a great lake of salt, which is Salt Lake City. That's why they were looking for fresh waters to make their next place of habitation, which was in the spring-fed ponds or lake of Texcoco, and that's where they made Tenochtitlan, and they came to Mexico, with identifying the serpent on the cactus in the middle of a body of water. They're coming from the north. Anyway, to me, that's why I became an ethnographic documentary filmmaker, because history cannot tell a lie. It's already happened. You know what I'm saying? I mean, there is revisionist history. Believe me, there's a lot of that going around. Since the Europeans landed, they created their own historical perspective. But I am really, that's why I say I'm honored, privileged, and at the same time, very humbled to be here at this time, witnessing what I'm witnessing, because we are moving towards something. It's we can't keep going at the rate we're going as a system, because we're going to implode on ourselves. And yet, all the conflicts around us are very meaningful in the sense that they're continuing, and nobody is, outraged. I mean, I'm sure there's people that are outraged, but I'm talking about the powers that be, that allow these conflicts to happen. I mean, as a nation, we're an adolescent when we compare ourselves to the indigenous nations that are here, who've been around for millennia. And then there's the European nations that have been around for millennia. So when this United States of America, is barely walking on 2 feet, if I could say, what have they learned from the elders? What have they learned from, the indigenous wisdom traditions and sages from other nations? What have they learned? What values do they have? I mean, now that I'm 65, I'm like really, I'm in the process of saying, okay, what is my value as a human being? How do I have value as a human being? Am I here just to take up space, breathe in air, take in sunlight, eat what's around me? Is that what I'm here for? Is there more to me than just consumption? Am I here for a purpose? And I have to say, and this is why I honor my parents, because my mother and father taught me, you are here to be aware of what's going on around you. Be aware of others who may have less, who may be suffering, who may be hurting, who may be needing something. Your intelligence, your maturity as a human being is, how do you respond to your environment? How do you respond to other human beings?
Let's break for music. Our musical breaks throughout this show are Native American church peyote healing chants provided by Fidel's nephews, Elijah Claw and Joshua Claw.
Thank you.
This is the Made of Clay Report with Peaches Gillette and Eric Clay. Our guest on this episode is Fidel Moreno of Red Nations Rising. Today's topic is the recognition and support of Indigenous peoples and Fidel's life experience in a world marred by racism and classism. We're also highlighting two events that Fidel is connected with. One is the International Day of Peace on September 21st from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. at 334 Hunt Hill Road in Ithaca. And the other is the October 13 Indigenous Peoples Day celebration at 2 p.m. at South Hill Cidery and at 7 p.m. at First Presbyterian Church in Trumansburg. And on October 11, Peaches will address land acknowledgement statements and how to truly recognize Indigenous peoples at the Interfaith and Secular Ethics Conference at Namgyal Monastery. More information on all of these events can be found at madeofclay.org, and this conversation may be listened to in its entirety at madeofclay.org.
It's interesting being here in Ithaca. I have to say that I have, I've been coming to Ithaca for about 17 years with my films to the Indigenous Studies program. The last time was 7 years ago when I did a film on Standing Rock. And I met some beautiful people, caring people.
Nice.
And then I've been coming back here the last 3 years to different festivals. My nephew, Theo Whitley, brought me here to Lionsgate Festival. And I've been to Soul Bloom, and I've been to Sweet Nectar and other festivals. Creating elders circles, inviting elders to come and be in a circle. Not just, I'm not the elder. I'm a young man still. I'm 65. My elders are in their 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
It's interesting what this society terms a senior, an elder, but I know a lot of elders, and I knew my great grandmother. She passed away when I was 15 at 101. Rafaelita, Mamalita, we used to call her, my mom's father's mother, who was Sephardic Jew. And anyway, so I just, I am in amazement here in Ithaca. There's so many different groups, so many different organizations, so many networks. And yet, I don't know if the right hand knows what the left hand is doing here in this community. I know that people talking on the periphery. I know that if you piss one person off here in Ithaca, you piss off 90% of Ithaca. it's incestuous here. It's very interesting here. So I'm not a quiet person. I'm a triple Taurus, and I'm South Side of Chicago. I'm OG. and you mix with Sephardic Jew and North African and Mexican, you got a ball of energy, right? So I'm not everybody's cup of tea, and that's all right.
Right.
I don't want to be everybody's cup of tea.
That's right.
Right. And not everybody's my cup of tea. So it's been an interesting experience to be here, especially with, I got to tell you, Reverend Peaches and Eric.
Yeah.
I've never been around so many white privileged liberals who talk a lot. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And so I just am in amazement, that things happen, because there sure is a lot of talk.
Yeah.
And I'm like the lowest man on the totem pole, and I hear gossip about what's going on in my own church. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. Yes.
So it's an interesting dynamic here. But anyway, back to the point that I think I'd like to underscore is that my work, I my degree is in criminology, and I was very much influenced by Dr. Greg Barrick, who's still my friend today, and he's writing his memoirs. Mm-hmm. I'm still in touch with him, and not much has changed.
Yeah.
Since I went to college and graduated in 1983, there's still racism, there's still classism, there's still sexism. We're still at war. I remember, I shared with the students last night, I was at the 100-year anniversary of The Hague. I was there with Chief Orville Looking Horse, the 17th generation caretaker of the White Buffalo Calf Pipe. He'd invited me to travel with him, so I went. Queen Noor was there, Bishop Desmond Tutu. We were all in the same room. And there was about 200 people at The Hague. And Nelson Mandela was there. I mean, there was a lot of people there, you know, dignitaries and very, you know, there were some celebrities there. Anyway, everybody was talking. And all of a sudden, we hear marching. And into view comes these handsome, tall, strong-looking. At the time, I didn't know what they were, who they were, but they were in their leathers. They were like on motorcycles, I guess. We found out later they were in leathers, and they lined up. They marched in, and they did their haka, you know. And turns out they were Maoris doing their warrior dance. They didn't say a word. They didn't make any kind of political overtures. They just did their warrior dance. You could hear a pin drop. Quiet. And they finished it, and they marched right back out. And basically, their statement was, "You're celebrating your 100 years of peace at The Hague. There's still war going on with our people in New Zealand." You see what I'm saying? So I was impressed by that, and I shared that with the students last night. I said, "You know, sometimes you don't have to talk; just make an action." You know, what do they say? You know, a picture has 1,000 words,
Yes,
right?
pictures
Well,
worth a thousand
imagine,
words.
and ma yeah, ma imagine an action, you know, that you come into a church or a place. Imagine if the Maoris came and did that at the UU, Reverend Peaches. What do you think would happen? What do you think would happen if the Onondagas or the Senecas came in with their drum group, dressed in their regalia, and just sang a powerful song and walked out? What do you think the reaction would be of the UU Church here in Ithaca?
Well, I mean, in my mind, they would just like intellectualize it, miss the point, it completely miss the point, and get swept up with like the superficiality of the cultures that they learned is relevant. It would be a really interesting experience.
Right?
They would be
So that's what I
entertained as
was
opposed to people ab
educated,
absorbing.
moved. So, you know, I shared that with these students, you know, in a good way, and said, you know, thank you for holding this memorial, for holding this candlelight vigil. Thank you for standing up, because I heard about the Cornell administration, you know, coming down on teachers, you know, and students, and, you know, people that were pro-Palestinian, you know, support and issues. And these students were very, very upset, you know, and rightly so. You know, we live in a country that has a constitution and a bill of rights that says we have the right to a free assembly and free speech. You know, I did a film in 1991 called The Peyote Road with Peter Coyote, who was the actor activist who narrated it, and we screened it here, I think for on Zoom with the UU Church. And The Peyote Road, the brainchild of that was the late Chief Reuben Snake, who was Ho-Chunk, Winnebago. And I had the privilege and honor of working with Reuben the last 10 years of his life. And in fact, I just met someone here, a Seneca elder named Dr. Tom White Wolf, who worked with Reuben on the Hill in D.C. on Indian policy. And I met him at Green Star of all places. And we were looking at each other. We introduced each other. And I was supposed to have tea with him this afternoon, but he had a stomach bug. So he asked me if we could do it next week. And I'd love to introduce you to him, because he is like, I told you, he's a 40-year Methodist minister. He's writing his memoirs. He's an activist. And he's right here in our own backyard, you know? Anyway, so the point I was making is that this film, The Peyote Road, was done in response to the 1991 Al Smith case, which was a Yakima Indian man who was fired from his job at a rehab for being a member of the Native American Church and ingesting the sacrament peyote. Now, as far as I know, I have a lot of relatives myself, my uncles and my nieces and my cousins, who are in several branches of the armed forces, you know, defending this way of life, the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. And I also know a lot of Native Americans. I mean, the first code talkers in World War I were the Comanches. In World War II, it was the Choctaws. And in the South Pacific, it was the Navajo. The Navajos get all the credit, but there has been a lot of Native code talkers in World War I, World War II, South Pacific, Korea, Vietnam. And many of these Native people were ready to resign from high posts, intelligence posts, when they were going to be denied the right to use their sacrament in their, centuries old religious spiritual tradition.
Yes.
And so this film was done and screened for Congress, and there was a campaign, a year-long campaign, the American and Religious Freedom Act campaign, which Reuben Snake spearheaded with many of the Native American church leadership, Truman Daly, people like that, and Senator Daniel Inouye of Hawaii, a Korean decorated war veteran, and Congressman, remember Ben Nighthorse Campbell from Colorado. They fought hard to get Congress to author and pass the American and Religious Freedom Act after watching the Peyote Road. And it was that only an act of Congress can reverse a U.S. Supreme Court case, which is what that film did. Many good people worked on it. The late Gary Ryan, my co-producer, co-director, many, Phil Cousineau, who is a writer for the Joseph Campbell series, The Hero's Journey, Bill Moyer, Joseph Campbell series. And, I mean, it's like in this day and age, why are indigenous people still have, like, the civil rights movement? Why do we need to keep educating and fighting for something that is inherently our sovereign, spiritual, God-given right? Why? Why? Because there's a nation, there's a privileged white political leadership that is classist, racist, and still sees us as a population, as a community of brown, red, black communities to subjugate and oppress.
That's right.
That's why.
That's right.
I mean, that's the only reason I can think of why we have to keep fighting for our rights, right? I mean,
Yeah, I love it. Yeah. I always ask that question.
so
Why are we still in the same battle for rights? Why are we still
mean, I don't know.
talking about the same
Yeah.
things? Why are we still trying to educate people about over the same issues constantly? And it can become very discouraging, And you and I also find
Yeah.
people take what people will do, no matter what kind of information you bring to them or what kind of truth you bring to them about our history, is they will narrow it down, they will chop it into pieces and narrow it down into things that feel comfortable to what they already believe to begin with, as opposed to looking at it as new information to broaden who we are as people and our relationships with other communities,
Yeah.
Let's break for music. Our musical breaks throughout this show are Native American church peyote healing chants provided by Fidel's nephews, Elijah Claw and Joshua Claw.
Oh, one day, you're in your own way.
This is the Made of Clay Report with Peaches Gillette and Eric Clay. Our guest on this episode is Fidel Moreno of Red Nations Rising. Today's topic is the recognition and support of Indigenous peoples and Fidel's life experience in a world marred by racism and classism. We're also highlighting two events that Fidel is connected with. One is the International Day of Peace on September 21st from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. at 334 Hunt Hill Road in Ithaca. And the other is the October 13 Indigenous Peoples Day celebration at 2 p.m. at South Hill Cidery and at 7 p.m. at First Presbyterian Church in Trumansburg. And on October 11, Peaches will address land acknowledgement statements and how to truly recognize Indigenous peoples at the Interfaith and Secular Ethics Conference at Namgyal Monastery. More information on all of these events can be found at madeofclay.org, and this conversation may be listened to in its entirety at madeofclay.org.
So, you know, I'm going to backtrack just a little bit, if I may, sure. Reverend Peaches and Eric.
Sure.
So out of college, I worked in gang intervention. That brought me into suicide prevention. I worked in gang intervention for almost 8 years, and then I worked in suicide prevention for 22 years. And I'm still working in restorative justice. There's a couple of different benefactors and a foundation that has funded my work. And so I work with historical trauma, intergenerational grief, and you know, I do something. I started doing something. We actually launched a campaign to share information and historical perspective on Indigenous issues around land and also culture.
Right.
And religious freedom. There was a film that came out called Killers of the Flower Moon.
Oh, yes, okay.
And this film is based on the book. I read the book about 5 years ago, and I remember I read it in 2 days. And this was a factual happening amongst the Osage in the 20s and 30s, from 1920 to 1938, I think it happened.
Okay.
And maybe a little mistaken on the years of ending, but Osage tribal members were murdered, killed, drugged, and there was a whole Oklahoma State political conspiracy. From the governor's office to judges to doctors, to law enforcement, to sheriffs. They were all involved in the murder of Osages to get their mineral rights, their land deeds, and many white men married into white men, mostly married Osage women, so they could then murder them and take over their mineral deeds, oil deeds. And this movie, Scorsese, De Niro, and DiCaprio were in. And so a friend of mine contacted me and said, "Hey, this movie's coming out." This movie got, a 25 minute standing ovation at Cannes Film Festival.
Okay.
And the politics of it, here is they did not get one award. This film did not get one award because of the West Coast, East Coast politics of filmmaking.
Okay.
And it was a very powerful film. We launched Red Nations Rise, a campaign here at Cornell University, through some very nice people that offered to speak. There was a little bit of difference in what we wanted to do. We wanted to have a dialogue, and the powers that be at Cornell wanted it to be basically, people talking and people listening. And it's on our website. You can go to our website, www.rednationsrising.org.
Great.
And so we had our first gathering in Texas. And, so an interesting, again, history doesn't lie. So the Quakers, who can say they're probably the only religious group that can say they never took a native life, some of them were killed because for the early native people, Europeans looked European. They didn't know a difference between a Methodist and a Catholic and a Quaker. But come to find out that the Quakers in 1760, at the behest of Chief Cornstalk of the Seneca, were asked to build a schoolhouse and teach the te Seneca children how to speak, read, and write English, and how to begin to learn basic farming.
Okay.
Okay. Now, what happened is very interesting. The Quakers went on to open and manage over 100 residential schools in the Northeast, in the Midwest, in Texas. And so now there's a movement by Paula Palmer, a Quaker from Boulder, Colorado, Quaker Friends Group, where she does a workshop and she's done her research. We had her come to our first gathering in Texas, Red Nations Rising gathering in Conroe, Texas, at a retreat center. We had about 80 people come, native, non-native, therapists, healers, counselors, and they sat in two workshops where Paula Palmer talked about right relationship with indigenous people
Okay.
and right relationship with the land.
Oh.
So it's interesting. It's interesting to me, Reverend Peaches, and I would love to hear what you think about this. Forgive me for going on and off. Forgive
Yeah,
me.
yes, no, go.
I know there's been a very strong black reparations movement, and land is being returned to African Americans. There's a growing number of African Americans, who are farming, which is beautiful people of color, Native Americans. And so when I, you know, when I've been asked to come do blessings at these, or I'm at these places where people stand up and do land acknowledgments, and some people were very upset and angry, native and non-native, when Paula Palmer gave her right relationship with indigenous people, because, and they basically said, "Okay, you've done your homework, you've done your research, you're acknowledging, like Cornell, that probably one of the biggest land grab universities is Cornell, right? And so what? They do a land acknowledgement, put your money where your mouth is.
I agree. I agree.
You know, I mean, what are you returning? What are you doing when you're doing a land acknowledgement? What does that mean? What is the value of that? Thank you for, okay, acknowledging the first people, but what about what's happened to the first people? What about the loss of language, the loss of spiritual traditions, the loss of connection? You know, there's been some of that. Yes, some of that's been reclaimed. And yes, some tribes still have held on to their tongue and their ceremonies. But there's a lot of tribes, like the ones that got forcibly relocated to Oklahoma. Very little of those tribes speak their language.
I'm with you.
And, you know, they have some ceremonies, but many of them have taken on Christianity. And I'm not saying that's bad. I'm just stating a fact. You know, there's
Yes,
nothing,
of course.
you know, I'm just saying, you know, Jesus and Christianity is a immigrant religion and spiritual tradition. It's not indigenous to America. You know, if there was any form of an indigenous God, it'd be more feminine and matrilineal and matriarchal than patriarchal and male. Do you know what I'm saying?
And it's a huge struggle. I talk to people all the time that, this idea of trying to recapture and re-educate, the native peoples about their language and their traditions, is left upon a handful of people who may still have theirs to teach the next
Right.
generation, because so many people have been stripped of it that there aren't even enough older people or elders or people to even really flood their young people with this education. And I see people struggling to reinstate all of that. When I was out
Yeah.
in South Dakota, I have friends in South Dakota and North Dakota who are of the native heritage, who are really, really working hard to try to reinstate these things that have been stolen from them,
Yeah.
And it's
Well,
not as
you
if the government is stepping in and saying, oh, we did this to you, let us help you recapture and reestablish this to a really large degree. It really is a struggle.
Yeah. There's for sure there's a lot of challenges, and I know there are sincere efforts by Native communities, elder circles, indigenous elder circles, and there are some university programs where there are sincere attempts to re-educate, recapture, and move forward with learning the language, learning the value in the language, you know. And I mean, that's why my work, you know, for the last 38 years as an ethnographic documentary filmmaker has been telling, working with sharing the technology with young Native people and communities to tell their own story, to document their language, to, you know, use the technology that we have in cameras and in record devices to maintain and keep what may be lost if we don't, you know. I mean, it's interesting, the residential schools did a lot of damage, a lot of damage, you know, in the 20s, 30s, 40s, and even to the 50s. And you know, my own son, who's half Diné, went to a day boarding school in New Mexico, and you know, and it was still a residential school. Anyway, there's a lot there. There's a lot to really look at, and there's a lot to keep asking. What more can I do? What
I
more
agree.
can I do? What I do?
Let's break for music. Our musical breaks throughout this show are Native American church peyote healing chants provided by Fidel's nephews, Elijah Claw and Joshua Claw.
No, I didn't.
This is the Made of Clay Report with Peaches Gillette and Eric Clay. Our guest on this episode is Fidel Moreno of Red Nations Rising. Today's topic is the recognition and support of Indigenous peoples and Fidel's life experience in a world marred by racism and classism. We're also highlighting two events that Fidel is connected with. One is the International Day of Peace on September 21st from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. at 334 Hunt Hill Road in Ithaca. And the other is the October 13 Indigenous Peoples Day celebration at 2 p.m. at South Hill Cidery and at 7 p.m. at First Presbyterian Church in Trumansburg. And on October 11, Peaches will address land acknowledgement statements and how to truly recognize Indigenous peoples at the Interfaith and Secular Ethics Conference at Namgyal Monastery. More information on all of these events can be found at madeofclay.org, and this conversation may be listened to in its entirety at madeofclay.org.
And that's really my begrudgment with the whole land acknowledgement. My question, that's why I'm trying to organize a conversation. My question is, okay, that's great. Now, what else? What else are you doing? Mm-hmm. You know, and also we don't even think about how, and it's the same thing with Black communities and any other communities that you stripped of their traditions and their language and whatever, is on top of all of that strippage, we have created all these other problems, these social problems, the emotional problems, these home problems, that now they have to navigate their way through all of that stuff to even get back to trying to learn their traditions and their language. You know, we've compiled the problem manyfold, creating poverty, creating alcoholism, creating all this stuff that people still have to navigate through to get even back to their own, you know, cultures.
Or just back to themselves. I think it's the same thing. Yeah, who they are. Yeah.
Yeah.
Many people don't know is that the land that was Cornell's land grant was not in New York State. It was a large chunk of northern Wisconsin.
Interesting.
And from that land was harvested timber that would be used to put into poles for telegraph systems and for other pieces, the relationship with Wells and International Telephone and Telegraph and Wells Fargo, all of that, you know, goes back to that time. And we haven't seen it documented. And my guess is that the relationship of Cornell to Indigenous peoples in northern Wisconsin might in some sense be even clearer than the relation you would be able to find here. But I don't know that for a fact. But I know that we haven't tracked where the land grants were made that funded the different land grant universities that went to all of the states at different times. Rutgers is a land grant college.
Yes.
So as in the, and every state has, and almost every state has one.
That's right.
So you bring up an interesting point, Eric, and also too, Reverend Peaches, you know, and I guess in the work of, you know, working with suicide prevention, working with gang intervention, there is a direct cause and effect you know, with these communities of color in urban centers and these rural indigenous communities reservations, as they're called, you know, and there's a lot of challenges, you know. I mean, I just last year, one of my brothers, his brother lost two daughters to intimate partner violence from a jealous boyfriend, and then we find out that this jealous boyfriend was raised around, you know, with alcoholic parents on the reservation. I mean, it's you know, people don't see the cause and effect. They don't see the historical relationship
No, they do not.
between the spiritual and cultural oppression and how alcohol was allowed to numb the senses, you know.
Yes.
Children were stolen from their parents and you know, forcibly taken across state lines into residential schools at the Carlisle Indian School. I mean, you know, the Carlisle Indian School is named after a military, you know, general. I mean, you know, a lot of these residential schools were the administrators were military people,
Yes.
you know. So it's like basically military camps, you know, that they were their children were forced to go to, their haircut,
Yes. Yes.
their clothing taken, their languages not being able to speak their languages, not to be eaten it, to be eating their traditional foods. I
Yes.
mean, totally without any form of culture that those children might have known and loved and held on to was totally stripped and forcibly removed from them. You know, if that was done, you know, to white settlers, you can be sure there'd be battles being fought, you know, all over this
Yes.
country if that
No.
had happened to white children. Yeah.
Yes. And, you know, and to even talk about the shame that has been part of all of that, to make people feel ashamed of who they were and ashamed that they had these traditions and ashamed of living in tribes and ashamed of all the things as if there's something. I've seen that done to even Asian people who live in certain groupings at times
Yeah.
when I
Yeah.
worked at private school, that they were literally made to feel ashamed of teaching their children their own language, ashamed of how they lived, their community beds, whatever it was. Like that shame also comes into the picture. Of people
You know,
struggling
and
to
it's,
get back to who they are.
yeah, and it's not to say, you know, that there aren't, you know, amazing individuals that come from these communities that are, you know, in colleges and creating their own path, if you will, you
Always.
know, of leadership and resilience and
Always. They're
sustainable, you
all.
know, perseverance. That's not to say those things aren't happening. They are
That's right.
happening, you know, but I've worked in you know, in the shadows of alcoholism and historical trauma, and I still see it, you know, it's still there. I mean, I
I
still,
agree.
you know, today I'm in the commons and I meet a Onondaga woman named Jackie, whose father was the chief of the Onondagas. And she, you know, and I was like, wow, this is amazing. We had a conversation and she lives in Dryden and it's beautiful. Okay, wonderful to meet, you know, these amazing people that have somehow survived and gotten through and been able to overcome whatever challenges there were. You know, it's not to say those people aren't there. You know, I just want to acknowledge that there are
No, they're
people
always there. They always
that,
have been there. They're the most amazing
yeah.
people to me, who we should be studying in some ways to understand how that happens. And I think that what bugs me more than anything is this lack of accountability. You know, this lack of this understanding. You know, it's superficial, and that's what land acknowledgments. It's like, well, we have some a little bit of taking some accountability for what has been done, but that's it. That's it.
Well, yeah, let me
So,
ask you a question because I haven't. So go ahead, Eric, please.
I want to dovetail, follow what Peaches was saying in terms of, would it make more sense to tell the story of a living Indigenous person and what they've done with their lives at the same time as the land acknowledgments are made? Would there be a way of humanizing and creating a personal connection It's a little more, it's a little more than virtue signaling, but not much.
Right,
But
but
it but
that's a
well, let me
conversation.
ask. Yeah.
That's the conversation, Eric, that needs to be had. What more can we do? Even
Yeah.
if it's a little bit, but something more than what we're doing right now, especially for as long as we've been doing it. Okay, we've been doing this for a long time. I mean, I came up here and the first time I saw a land acknowledgement, which you hardly see in New York City, I thought, okay, that's really interesting. That was my only feelings, like, what is that all about? And then I've been up here for almost 11 years, and we're still doing the same thing.
Right.
That's what bugs me, when you talk about, and people always use the expression baby steps. Well, the whole goal of taking baby steps is so that you learn to run and walk and fly. It's not to stay in that stage of development.
Right.
I don't want to beat a dead cat, as they say, or a dead dog. I just wonder, I mean, are those individuals really the exception or the norm? And then the other thing, is I guess in the interfaith movement, there's a movement of, looking at white privilege and what is that and what does that mean as a form of self-reflection and community reflection, individual reflection. And I remember one time after, it was right after the movie came out, I was in Durango, Colorado, and I was asked to come to a church. And everybody came and they were all nice and smiling and friendly. And I said, and I said to people, I introduced myself to people and I said, I'm gonna ask you to please allow me to have a righteous rage. Don't take this personally, but I want to have a righteous rage right now about what I'm feeling. And boy, I tell you, some people sat up when I started going into a righteous rage about, my own experience in Mexico and the experience of emasculation of a total society, by a Catholic Church, and this happened up in Canada with the Jesuits and the Franciscans in New Mexico and in California, the Mission Indians,
That's right.
I mean, it's very, very interesting, how we as Indigenous people look at our own,
Let's break for music. Our musical breaks throughout this show are Native American church peyote healing chants provided by Fidel's nephews, Elijah Claw and Joshua Claw.
Hallelujah, 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 hallelujah
This is the Made of Clay Report with Peaches Gillette and Eric Clay. Our guest on this episode is Fidel Moreno of Red Nations Rising. Today's topic is the recognition and support of Indigenous peoples and Fidel's life experience in a world marred by racism and classism. We're also highlighting two events that Fidel is connected with. One is the International Day of Peace on September 21st from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. at 334 Hunt Hill Road in Ithaca. And the other is the October 13 Indigenous Peoples Day celebration at 2 p.m. at South Hill Cidery and at 7 p.m. at First Presbyterian Church in Trumansburg. And on October 11, Peaches will address land acknowledgement statements and how to truly recognize Indigenous peoples at the Interfaith and Secular Ethics Conference at Namgyal Monastery. More information on all of these events can be found at madeofclay.org, and this conversation may be listened to in its entirety at madeofclay.org.
You know, I have to say that there's I want to touch on something within Indigenous, you know, communities and people of color, is that we're always, and forgive me if I get this wrong, Reverend Peaches, but I hear about, you know, light-skinned blacks, you know, being like there's a certain internalized racism. I don't know, Pedagogy of the Oppressed says that the oppressors, the oppressed turn on some of the
absolutely
some of the oppressors' ways, you know.
Yeah,
very oppress good. Their own. And I have to say, you know, that in my working with some of the Oklahoma tribes and working, I remember my Choka Ruben Snake had a heartbreak when he was trying to get the Lumbees, you know, of recognition. And there was so much pushback because they looked black.
Yes.
You know, yes. Your typical Indian straight hair, you know, brown skin.
That's right.
And they had Negro features. And then to hear about the Cherokees, the freemen of the Cherokees being, you know, expelled by the Cherokee Nation.
Yes.
You know, I mean, there is that within Mexican culture too. Like we,
that's right.
In Mexico, even though my father was white and his father was white, my mother's people called my father a pata rajada, which means split foot, because the Indians would wear sandals and they have a callus between their big toe and their fingers. That's what they were called. It was very derogatory, you know? And it's really interesting being raised, you know, in a family where there's a lot of light-skinned people. And then my mother's dark-skinned and her older brother, and the rest are light-skinned. And I'm dark and my sister's light-skinned. My little brother was light-skinned. So it's interesting being raised in that. And does this sound familiar with being, you know, African-American and being light-skinned and dark-skinned? I mean, is there a similar experience with that?
It's completely heavy duty. It's real and it's very heavy duty. And it's a way of not only, you know, we talk about it as like the self-hate, right? That's the way we frame it. But is it really the teaching of hating yourself? It didn't just come from the internal part of who that person individual is. It is that we are surrounded by hating ourselves. We are surrounded by only seeing white faces. We are surrounded by those people. If you watch movies, like if you count the amount of lines that a black person has who's not famous, let's say, compared to how many lines a white person has, you will be amazed at what that is. In the past, they wouldn't even put a couple of black people in the same movie. They'd only put one. All of this stuff filters into our psyches. And it becomes how we start judging one another. I had the same experience being in the Dominican Republic, where the lighter-skinned Dominicans hated the darker-skinned Dominicans. You know, it is not something we have done to ourselves. And that's one of the things that outrages me. because we're taught that we did this to ourselves. But
Right.
what we really have learned is that the closer you are to white, it was why Sidney Poitier, even though his skin was not very light, because he spoke white. So the attitude is the closer you are to white, the more significant you are. And that's what we
Right.
are all of our lives.
Yeah, I remember as a child being very aware of those energies and differences in my own family and community. Even though my parents were very loving and very strong in terms of being citizens and being of service and being hardworking, when I would go to the village, there would be some interesting energies, in the village. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
It was a native village, but the poor were on the other side of the river, were dark and would be more indigenous, in terms of their clothing. And then the Mexicanized huichols were, on the other side of the river, and in homes and had, lands, and it was very different. You could do the marked difference, and yeah, very interesting, very interesting. So, with that, I'm always in the state of learning, when I come to a, you know, I've been, I mean, I've been coming to the Northeast for many years. I lived in the Berkshires for 15 years, and Vermont, New York, and Mass, and I actually had, I remember I screened one of my films at South Hill Cyrie, Wiping the Tears of Seven Generations, about the 1890 Indian Massacre. And I had a woman, very white, waspish, intelligent-looking woman. Why are you here? Like almost like I shouldn't be here. Well, is there a reason why I can't be here? And I said, I've been here for a long time. This is not the first time I'm here in Ithaca. Anyway, it was a very interesting energy with which she asked that, So I remember that. And it's like felt like, well, wait a minute, maybe I should turn that around and ask you, why the are you here? How many hundreds of years have you been here? And it's like, where are you from? I come from North America. This is my indigenous ancestral, birthright here, birthplace. Where are you from? What European country, nation are you from? Why did you come here? Why did your ancestors come here? But, good manners taught me to just kind of say, okay, maybe this lady has a problem, with me at another level. That's okay. Bring it to me. Anyway, so I really want to say thank you, because I think these conversations are important, and I think these conversations need to emerge and come on a community level, on a city level, on a state level, on a national level.
Agreed.
And there's amazing people that can contribute much to this conversation, all colors, all races, all cultures, all creeds. That's we're at this place now where, we have these technologies, social media, online forums. I mean, it's time to really like bring the walls down and say, what if, what if we could be really honest with one another? What if we could,
I love that.
if we really understand we're related, we're connected, we're five-fingered human beings, we use air, same air. There's no Republican air, there's no Democratic water. There's no rich sunlight, I mean,
I agree. And we hide.
Eric, it's yes. Eric, what are you thinking about all this? Being a nice white folk gentleman over there listening to all this, what do you think of this?
I am having lots of thoughts for a moment in terms of land acknowledgments.
Yeah.
In my tradition, my grandfather always prayed over the food to thank the lands and the animals
Yeah.
and the peoples whose
Yeah.
hands had provided the food and those who had prepared the food and those who would share the
Yeah.
food. And then when Cesar
Yeah.
Chavez was active, to also admit that this food is also the stolen wages and the poisoned land of where it came.
Yeah.
And we, those kinds of acknowledgments, when they become thoughtful and not just a public
Yeah.
show, like around a dinner table,
Yeah.
with
That's
people
right.
that you have an intimate relationship. They carry more weight, they carry more meaning. So that's one of the things, that's one of the places I went. Another place I went was to my great great grandfather, who seems to have hidden three children who were more black than his other, and nobody, quote, knew about them, but everybody did. And some of my other relatives were incredibly, incredibly racist and reactionary, and I understand now what they were hiding. And another place that I went was the public schools, beginning around 1900, for white folks were used for a similar sort of indoctrination, but we volunteered for it. And we accepted it, and we accepted mechanization and the dislocation from historic lands. I come from a place where five generations of my ancestors are buried within 6 miles of each other. I did not know my great great grandparents, but I knew people born in the 1870s and 1880s who did know all of those ancestors and learned from them. It doesn't make me not a white man of privilege, but it does make me the person that I am. And how do we show up in this conversation in a way that's real and supportive of each other? Those are the places that I go. My parents lost everything because my dad died and was losing all the free farm help that he had from kids. And a sustainable way of farming in the 1960s was not viable without doing it with the chemicals and the fertilizers and pesticides that were going to be necessary to make a living. But we had a subsistence farm, and we ate well, and we knew it. And because of attention to education, one of my sisters was a National Merit Scholar at University of Missouri, but it never used it, but never lived with a in-home toilet until she went to college. And that was true. We,
Interesting.
it's just a it's, we, it's a different. And anyway, so we need to find how to talk about the misuse of power for race colorization, racial reasons that we do not control, or class reasons that we do not control, and also just the misuse of power because we're squirrely human beings who sometimes want to take advantage of others.
And to also be real, still to continue to be realistic about the walls and the blockages that are built to keep people from getting where they need to go.
Let's break for music. Our musical breaks throughout this show are Native American church peyote healing chants provided by Fidel's nephews, Elijah Claw and Joshua Claw. This is the Made of Clay Report with Peaches Gillette and Eric Clay. Our guest on this episode is Fidel Moreno of Red Nations Rising. Today's topic is the recognition and support of Indigenous peoples and Fidel's life experience in a world marred by racism and classism. We're also highlighting two events that Fidel is connected with. One is the International Day of Peace on September 21st from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. at 334 Hunt Hill Road in Ithaca. And the other is the October 13 Indigenous Peoples Day celebration at 2 p.m. at South Hill Cidery and at 7 p.m. at First Presbyterian Church in Trumansburg. And on October 11, Peaches will address land acknowledgement statements and how to truly recognize Indigenous peoples at the Interfaith and Secular Ethics Conference at Namgyal Monastery. More information on all of these events can be found at madeofclay.org, and this conversation may be listened to in its entirety at madeofclay.org.
One of the other swords that is plunged into people is this idea that why are you still asking for more? This attitude that people have in terms of Indigenous people, Black people, people of color who are marginalized is like, we gave you enough freedom. You don't have to drink out of separate water fountains anymore. You had a Black president. You had Native American, you know. What more do you want us to do? I've heard people say that to people in their jobs.
Yes.
We gave you a job. You want a raise. What more do you want from us? You're lucky we hired you. There is that pervasive attitude that people have in this culture that we don't even talk about. And so white people who are sitting okay think like, I don't understand why you still have a problem.
Yeah.
We gave you everything you needed.
Right.
Well, the whole idea that you gave us everything you needed is the problem.
Is the problem, yes. That's exactly right.
You know?
Yeah.
But, and so for me, these maybe $30,000 to $50,000 per year that government takes in and spends per person on education, health, community services, whatever. If you could just write a check for, you know, $3,000 or $4,000 a month to every citizen from birth to death, that would begin to very slowly equalize this.
That's where my head is.
Yeah. But that is the only way I can think of making it work.
That's my head is with the universities. You know, you take people's land. Why don't you actually offer people scholarships or offer them free education? Because you did that. You know, for one generation to the next. Like,
right,
what
but I don't want charity. I took that. I got a full funding.
That's not charity. That's reparation.
Yes, I know. But in my case, it was charity, and it is damaging.
Okay.
And if everybody, if the government ceases to control education, health, housing, and people are cut a check for the value of that amount of stuff so that they work it out among their own people, then we have a chance of rebuilding communities.
We
have a
chance. I agree with that, and I also see the other part as well.
I know, yes.
Let me tell you something. If I were, as a Black person, didn't have to struggle all of my life to stop and go and stop and go to school because I had no money.
Right.
That would have made a whole difference generation after generation.
Yes.
Whether you wrote me a check, right? You could do it in that way.
Right.
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 Or you can say, you know what? We saw what we did. We saw what you built. We saw the land. We only exist because of your labor. Let us get back to that.
Right. You know, I would like to address something, if I may. You know, all of what both of you are saying, they're all very valid, you know, in terms of your understanding of privilege and of your own. Eric, thank you for sharing about your grandfather and how he acknowledged the food and the relationship, you know, that he had with the land. There's something else coming that and Reverend Peaches, I know you have a Christian background, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard your sermons, you know, a humanist understanding. Somewhere in our evolutionary consciousness, if we could call it that,
Nice.
We're going to come to a place when we're going to have to ask ourselves, you know, how much more do we need?
Mm-hmm.
How much more technology do we need? How much more,
Yes.
you know, new cars, new
Yes.
models do we need?
Yes.
How much more buildings do we need? You know, how many more nonprofits are we going to need in Ithaca to really
Exactly.
address, you know, the question of privilege, race, and I think there's something that can be learned from some of the indigenous cultures and other cultures where there is a gift-giving economy, a generosity-based economy, a giveaway economy, where, you know, for example, the Northwest relatives that have potlatches, you know, the you know, where you show your strength as a person by how much you give away. You
Yes,
know,
yes, yes.
the value of a person is not how much he consumes and how much he
Yes.
takes, you know, but how much he shares and how much he gives away, or she gives away, you know. So I think somewhere there is a wisdom that we're going to need to look at,
I agree,
because this system of capitalism
right
is not working.
That's
It's not working.
That's right.
I don't care what Trump does with tariffs and how much he tries to manipulate the market
Yes.
and money, he's not going to stop, you know, people from wanting who don't have,
That's
and
right.
from people who have more than they have and not knowing what to do with it and not being happy, you
Yes.
know?
Yes.
I mean, somewhere there's got to be a deep reflection, a pause, you know, a moment to really say, are we really happy?
Oh,
Are we
yeah.
really content? Are we healthy? You know,
Right.
are we at peace? You know, I think those fundamental questions, you know, are going to be asked sooner or later, hopefully sooner than later, because things are not going well.
Right. Right. Once
You
people
know,
start
I mean,
asking
that's
those.
personal feeling. I travel around the country a lot. I've traveled overseas. I traveled to Latin America, Central America. I mean, I've traveled to Europe, and you know, there's people asking those fundamental questions.
Absolutely.
You know, and
Absolutely.
I'm just wondering, you know, I mean, I work at a church that is very, for the most part, affluent. People are educated, and there are some people of conscience in this church,
Good.
and there are other people that, you know, they come on Sunday, do their tithing, and they go home and are about their business, and that's their right to do so.
Right.
You know, but
Right.
I'm just like, you know, what there's going to be, you know, a time in the future where we're going to have to look at these things.
That's right.
You
Can I
know?
tie what Peaches said about how her life would have been different had she not have to take time off from education and
Sure,
struggle?
please.
And your notion about how you can reflect on how you're using your time? I think for people who are struggling to survive and people who are affluent and bored or unmet, can't really reflect on that question. Certainly can't really reflect on it very effectively together. One of the things we don't realize is that most of our time is spent in unpaid labor. The only thing we do more than unpaid labor is sleep. And in that unpaid labor time is how we choose what we do with our time. And if people do have those resources to bring to their lives so that they don't have to worry about stopping and go out and scrounging for the next thing, they can choose better how they use their time. And I think Fidel, it will begin to organically address the question that you have exactly nailed as the next question. How can we have lives that are worthwhile without seeking more?
And if we
Without seeking what? I'm sorry, without seeking what?
seeking more stuff,
Okay.
and working more in ways that are not productive to other people.
Right. You know, we also don't look at how, or not enough, how what we have done to peoples, whoever they are, that perpetuates generational agony and poverty and despair folds into all of this. If we simply took away how we perpetuate those things, if we took away the blockages that we put up to stop people from getting where they go, all of those qualities, like resilience and fortitude and determination, would naturally rise to the surface because they are there in most
Exactly right.
people.
Yes.
But once you see a ceiling put up, then you have to take another direction, and it takes your attention away from those natural qualities that you have. You know, we talk about people not being motivated. This is like the stereotype of Black people and Puerto Rican people. And that's really not what's happening. And that's what I'm talking about when I talk about people holding themselves accountable. What has happened is we have made it so difficult for people to get where they need to get that they lose their sense of energy. They lose their sense of hope. And all of those things will stop us from getting where, but they're not deprived of resilience. They're not absent of motivation. It's just that they see the walls that are in front of them. And I know that for a fact. I've watched it all my life. I'm sure most of you have.
And they get stopped in their tracks, or they get distracted on an errand where they forget what they set out to do in the first
You
place.
got it. You got it. So here's the thing. It's almost as if you don't even, or the government, whoever you want to talk about, don't even have to do more. Just stop blocking people.
Do less.
Exactly.
Fund more, do less.
That's exactly right. That's right.
Let's break for music. Our musical breaks throughout this show are Native American church peyote healing chants provided by Fidel's nephews, Elijah Claw and Joshua Claw. This is the Made of Clay Report with Peaches Gillette and Eric Clay. Our guest on this episode is Fidel Moreno of Red Nations Rising. Today's topic is the recognition and support of Indigenous peoples and Fidel's life experience in a world marred by racism and classism. We're also highlighting two events that Fidel is connected with. One is the International Day of Peace on September 21st from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. at 334 Hunt Hill Road in Ithaca. And the other is the October 13 Indigenous Peoples Day celebration at 2 p.m. at South Hill Cidery and at 7 p.m. at First Presbyterian Church in Trumansburg. And on October 11, Peaches will address land acknowledgement statements and how to truly recognize Indigenous peoples at the Interfaith and Secular Ethics Conference at Namgyal Monastery. More information on all of these events can be found at madeofclay.org, and this conversation may be listened to in its entirety at madeofclay.org.
So, you know, I one of the reasons why, and then maybe this is the time to share that, you know, one of the reasons why I create, help support, produce events where people can come together, you know, and look for International Day of Peace.
Nice.
You know, for 32 years, a young man by the name of Jeremy Gilley, you know, from England, had a thought. What if he could get all the world leaders to consider a 24-hour ceasefire so that, you know, relief organizations, people that provided water, medical supplies, temporary housing could get into conflict zones and provide these things? What would that, if we could start with one day of peace, what could be built from that? So that's how the International Day of Peace was created. And in fact, Reverend Peaches, I sent you the link to Peace One Day, the film that you may try and get screened, you know, at the UU.
Excellent.
And maybe you can have Jeremy call in, or my friend Michael Johnson, who's my mentor that introduced me to the International Day of Peace.
Nice.
And we're creating that this September 21st here in Ithaca on Huntville Road at a friend of mine's wellness retreat center called Amazing Grace. And we're saying that it is a music as prayer.
Okay.
It's not a festival. It's not a concert. It's not band playing. It is music as prayer. We've asked certain people to come and share their gift of music to bring us together.
Nice.
In a place of reflection, soul reflection, and into a heart space to amplify the energy of peace and harmony.
Nice.
You know, that's what we're looking to do. I believe in energy. I believe in energy. I believe in prayer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so this is one of the things we're doing. And so I'd like people to know that, you know, you can come to the International Day of Peace event. It's not costing anything. And we're giving free vendor spaces to artisans, artists, nonprofits. And if you want to make a donation to the performers, that's wonderful. If you want to make a donation to several organizations that we support, directly to them. We don't want the money. You know, we're trying to create something that's not monetized in the way that you can bring your family. It's a very family-friendly event.
Yes.
So that's what we're doing. And
can you state the date and time and location of that one more time?
Yes, it is. International Day of Peace, September 21st, which is a Sunday, from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. at 334 Huntville Road, 15 minutes from downtown Ithaca. It's going to be at a wellness retreat that a friend of mine, Ian Peru, who's a local entrepreneur and builder, is creating a wellness retreat, and he's naming it after his mother, Alicia Alexander, who passed a little over a year ago and had an Airbnb called Amazing Grace. That's what the wellness retreat is going to be called. So we're doing it there. People can bring their own blankets, chairs, and just come and be. There could be some food vendors. There's going to be some artisans. There's going to be some nonprofits. And it's just the time to sit in reflection and in amplifying peace and harmony.
Nice.
You know, between our neighbors, within ourselves, to our community, to, you know, the earth, on the global level that we need it. That's what's happening on International Day of Peace. It is a United Nations global event. You can, you know, they're going to be ringing the United Nations bell at 12 noon on Friday and have a moment of silence.
Nice.
So we're going to have a 3 p.m. an interfaith prayer that we're asking several faith-based leaders, spiritual leaders here in the area to come in and share a prayer.
Yes.
At 3 p.m. on that day. And then, you know, we're also on October 13th is Indigenous Peoples Day.
Yes.
And our friend Steve Sellen at South Hill Cidery is helping us bring in Arvel Bird, who's he's Southern Paiute and Irish. He's a Celtic fiddler and a Native American flautist. I've known Arvel for many years and brought him to events in the Berkshires. 5 years in a row, families love him. He's an amazing storyteller and performer. And he'll be at South Hill Cidery at 2 p.m. on October 13th, Monday, Indigenous Peoples Day, which used to be Columbus Day.
Right, exactly.
You know? So these are some of the things that we're doing. And, you know, we're hoping that families come, elders come, children come, you know, people come. And take a moment to use music as a tool of prayer and amplification for peace and harmony. That's what we're hoping. That's what we're wanting. So I'm happy to you know, I think call it a session. I think we've shared enough. Unless you want to go on, Reverend Peaches, I know that you have a lot to share too, and I'm happy to listen. Eric, I'm sure you have a lot to share too. So let me know.
I'm simply very happy about, you know, what you just announced about the International Day of Peace. That's what around the Indigenous Peoples Day, that's when I want to try to organize a conversation about and acknowledgement and what more can we do. You know, to me,
right.
It's very connected to these International Days of Peace. I love the idea of when you mentioned earlier about wisdom traditions, that I think a lot of wisdom traditions, a lot has been lost. We have these, I look at families all the time, and I look at families who still have lots of elderly people in their homes, but everybody operates on such an individual level that we are not hearing the wisdom, even if it's being shared. And I think that we need to get back to that. And I really need to, we need to get back to taking pride in the wisdom that we have, because I think we've lost pride in the wisdom that we have from generation to generation. When I was listening to all your experience, and I listened to Eric's experiences and my own experiences, we have almost this panoramic view of the human condition, right? You work with gangs. You know, Eric worked in prisons. You know, not everybody has that panoramic view. Those views that we have are wisdom about who we are as people, what people need, what we can provide, who we can be as individuals in terms of our humanity and our wanting to share prayers and love and whatever else. And I think we need to get back to those kind of things with one another and encourage one another that it is meaningful in this life. I think more and more people are seeing it, but I think it's just not cohesive enough.
And the wisdom that you're talking about is the learning that we wring out of our experience,
Absolutely.
Whatever that experience is.
Absolutely. Yep.
Because I know that the people that were born around 1900, the message that they gave me almost to a person was the world couldn't care less about our wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
They have no use for us. And this was in the 1960s, 70s, and 80s. And I think we've lost a lot because we stopped really listening. And it's among Indigenous communities, it has an even more powerful resonance because of the role of the elder.
Yes, yes. Yeah. I have, you know, and you've heard this a million times, I would know nothing if it wasn't for my mother's wisdom.
Right.
Period. She was not an educated woman. She did not go to any traditional school. She was not caught up in pop culture psychology. And I would know nothing about being a human being if it weren't for my mother's wisdom. And I really treasure that. And I think she's learned her wisdom just by the life that she lived and the things she had to see and observe and make meaning of. It's not just about what we're watching, it's what we do with what we're watching, where we place what we're watching, how we can use it to make change that becomes the wisdom that we have. And I saw that in my mother very clearly. Not just complaining and bickering and blaming and whatever, but saying, this is the world I live in. What am I going to do with this?
I have a role in the universe of the world that I live in, even if I don't have a position in the social hierarchy.
That is exactly right. That is right.
And that is a sense of personal agency, which is priceless.
Yes.
Yeah. I had a grandmother and two grandmothers and my mother, father, you know, that totally lived in that world, you know, of what am I doing and what am I going to leave? You know, how am I affecting my children? You know, it's quite a challenge, you know, but that's, I mean, I think one of the things I'm learning, I'm 65 and I was asked to speak at a ceremony one time a couple weeks ago. And I said, you know, I'm learning to forgive. You know, this is what in at this stage in my life, I'm learning how to be, you know, more compassionate and how to be forgiving
I love that.
in the sense of being my own self of any kind of negative energy. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I don't want to carry that. I don't want to carry. You know, I'll tell you an interesting story, true story. There's a man, Leonard Littlefinger, who's interviewed in the film Wiping the Tears, and his grandfather was one of the survivors of the 1890 Wounded Knee massacre. And he shared that his grandfather, in his elder years, he still had a wound that never completely healed from being shot by a cavalry officer. And that he would always be washing it and tending it. And he told Leonard, he said, you know, Leonard, towards the end of his life, his grandfather's life, he asked him, so Grandpa, how do you really feel about what happened? What are your feelings about what happened? Because, you know, I've forgiven, you know, those soldiers and I've forgiven this government because I don't want to take it with me. I don't want it to stop me from seeing the face of my creator. That's what he told him.
I love that
And
statement.
not to say that we can't stop working towards social justice and you know a better environment for us to live in. But at one point, you know, there has to be, you know, a deep place of love.
I
You
agree.
know, a deep place of love. You know, and because I you know, I remember Bishop Desmond Tutu and the Dalai Lama saying that, you know, the most powerful act, you know, you can do is to forgive, you know, because it's helping you not carry something. You know what I'm saying?
That's right. That is true.
It's so I just wanted to share that. You know, I tell people, I mean, I'm happy to get in people's faces, you know. That's easy to do. There's a lot to be you know, righteously angry about, yes, on some level, but then on the other level, I tell people, I'm a nice guy. You know, I mean, if you get to know me personal level, I'm a human being. I like to break bread, I like to laugh, you know, I like to be at peace with my neighbor, you know. You know, and but I also, you know, yesterday in a group, you know, they were saying, we're talking about boundaries. And I remember what Mark Twain said, you know, good fences make good neighbors. You know, good boundaries make strong friendships. You know what I'm saying? I mean,
And
it's
the boundaries
important.
that we also place within ourselves, like when you talked about energy earlier, one of the things that keeps me being forgiving, a forgiving person, is that lack of forgiveness is an energy that I would be putting into the world. Hate is an energy I put into the world. I don't want to put into the world what I complain about being there. That doesn't make any sense to me, you
Yes.
know? And so
Yeah.
that's what you're reminding me of.
Thank you very much. This has been a lovely conversation. Fidel, thank you for sharing. And thank you for taking on that last little bit here because it's really rich too, along with all what we
Thank
do.
you.
Yeah, I am so happy we
Thank
did
you
this.
both.
I'm looking forward to the people who are listening and hearing about the International Day of Peace. And I'm hoping that it's filled. I'll be there in the afternoon and I'll do a prayer if you want me to. And I think it's very,
Please.
it's another way of putting energy into the world, you know, a good energy.
Absolutely. Thank you. Eric, I hope
Thank
to
you.
see you there. Busy. Thank you,
Thank you. No,
everyone.
this
Thank
is
you
very good.
so much.
This has been the Made of Clay Report with Peaches Gillette and Eric Clay. Our guest has been Fidel Moreno of Red Nations Rising. And this conversation may be listened to in its entirety at madeofclay.org.
Oh, and I know, 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 and I